Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
As the NBA continues to work towards restarting the season and figuring out what that season might actually look like, one of the superstars has fired a shot across the bow. You see, one of the issues for the league right now is to figure out what that season would look like exactly. Are there going to be regular season games? If there are regular season games, how many are there going to be? Just enough to get to 70, which would fulfill the regional TV deals? Or would there be more than that? Or maybe do they go right into the postseason? Or is there some sort of play-in tournament to figure out the final few playoff spots? So lots of questions, and we're still looking for answers. Damian Lillard, for one, though, made it very clear how he feels about coming back for a limited number of regular season games. He's not in favor of that. He told Chris Haynes, quote, "If we come back and they're just like, we're adding a few games to finish the regular season and they're throwing us out there for meaningless games and we don't have a true opportunity to get into the playoffs, I'm going to be with my team because I'm a part of the team, but I'm not going to be participating. I'm telling you that right now, and you can put that in there," end quote. All right, what do I always say? Have a take. Have a take. Don't suck. Well, that's a take. In fact, that's a take and a half. Now, for context, Portland is 3.5 games back of Memphis for the final playoff spot in the West. Lillard is saying that if the Blazers come back for a limited number of regular season games, but without a legitimate chance to get into the playoffs, he's not doing it. He's not playing. And if there are no regular season games at all, and the league goes directly into the postseason, then Lillard is going to be pissed. Quote, "Right now, I'm just in a space where I want to come back and play. And if we start playing, I'll be ready to play. But if the league says it's only taking playoff teams, then I'm off to a head start in my summer training. I'll be pissed off because I feel like they basically stopped the season and went straight into the playoffs. We're chasing the team with the toughest schedule in the league, and we're in ninth place. That would be weak. But it is what it is," end quote. In other words, if there are no regular season games, he's going to be pissed. If there are regular season games, but not enough to make the playoffs, he's going to take a seat. Again, I quote, "If we come back and I don't have an opportunity to make the playoffs, I will show up to work, I'll be at practice, and I'll be with my team. I'm going to do all that, and then I'm going to be sitting right on that bench during the games," end quote. So Damon's made it pretty clear, you know, for who, for what. I get it. If it's just a handful of regular season games, and you can't actually get into the playoffs, then what is the point? You're not playing for the fans, because the fans won't be there. And what if he gets hurt in games that don't matter? But don't get this twisted. He's not going to be skipping town. He'll be there. He'll practice with the team. He'll support the team. But he's going to sit on the bench during the games. And I understand that too. Because there wouldn't be anything to play for. That would essentially be a set of exhibition games. But if there is something on the line, he's all in. Quote, "If they come back and they say it's something like a tournament, play-in style, between the number 7 and number 12 seeds, if we're playing for playoff spots, then I think that's perfect," end quote. I do too. See, that's the thing. Damian Lillard is the ultimate competitor. He's not quitting. He's not shutting it down. He's not looking for a way out. He's not trying to get out of anything. He's trying to get into the playoffs. Give him a chance at the playoffs, he'll be fired up and he'll go. And he believes that if they get that chance and they make it in, they're going to make some noise. They played most of their season without their starting center and their power forward, but the expectation is they'll get them both back. Nurk and Collins. And if Lillard is juiced up because Nurk and Collins might be rusty, the whole league will be. Like, he thinks that some teams are going to be vulnerable because their mindset's not going to be right. Damian also said this, quote, "I do feel like if we do come back and our mind is right, we can beat anyone. It's going to be hard to get going with no fans. You've been off all this time and some people are just ready for summer. Like, I haven't played in a long time and the season is basically over to me." do I really care like I cared before? It's going to be a lot of those factors going on, and that presents a lot of room for a team to overperform, like really mess around and knock some teams off, and then, oh, they're in the Western Conference Finals. It's room for that with this situation, end quote. See what I'm saying? This is not a guy looking to get out of it. It's a guy looking to get into it. I like that take. He sees an opportunity. He knows there are going to be teams that are not properly prepared if and when this does fire up. Teams that are already going to be in summer mode. He thinks that his team and he himself can capitalize on that. You know, quote, really mess around, and then all of a sudden, bam, they're in the Western Conference Finals. One last quote from Lillard. Quote, so the fact that it's possible and we wouldn't get an opportunity at that, that's weak to me. I ain't getting no younger. Again, that does not sound like a guy who's quitting or looking for a way out. That sounds like a guy who ain't getting no younger. It sounds like a guy who just wants the games to mean something. He wants games with stakes. Big stakes, because he knows that Portland can handle those stakes. He knows that he was built for those moments. Moments like this.
Clock is off. Portland has a timeout. Lillard, a chance to send the Thunder home. Lillard, long range three, and it's good! At the buzzer, Damian Lillard! Are you kidding me?
All the guy's asking for is a chance. A chance to have that moment. And given how he's shown up in that moment, I would love to see him get that chance once again. I want that as well. I want it for him. I want it for all of us. Because I want to see something like that again. Hell, I want to hear it again right now, Alvy. Do it.
Lillard, long range three. And it's good! At the buzzer! Damian Lillard! Are you kidding me?
Man, I missed that. We all missed that. I can't wait to see that again, but we can't see it if he doesn't get the opportunity. And that's all he's asking for. Just give me the opportunity. But if you're bringing me back to play for nothing, I'm not playing. I don't blame the guy. And he's right. He ain't getting no younger. None of us are. All right, so I'll even throw it out to you. Where'd he come out on that? 1-800-636-8686. One more thing about Damian Lillard. What he's saying is this. Why go to all that time to have a camp, do all that work, put ourselves out there, and then ask us to play games that don't matter? If we don't at least have a chance to go into the playoffs, then why do it? I agree. Why do it? Why assume the risk? What if he gets hurt? They're going to rush back. What if he gets hurt? What's the point? 1-800-636-8686. Other things I want to talk about too. Major League Baseball. Got an issue here. I know the last thing anybody wants to hear about or talk about are millionaires fighting with billionaires, but there is an issue about money once again. We'll get into that. They're also asking themselves, for who, for what? Is it really worth it? MLBers already are going to deal with a prorated salary. That's fine. They agreed to that. But now the owners want to take even more money from them. And now a lot of them, especially the big money guys, are saying, yeah, I really don't know. Again, I'm going to put myself out there. At a greatly reduced salary with a lot of risk. Is that worth it? Maybe not. Brandon McManus is my guest. Brandon, great to have you on. Before we talk about anything, let me first ask you, how are you and everybody around you, your wife and your twins, doing during this very unusual time?
Thanks, Jim, for having me. I appreciate you asking. Everything's been good. We've been fortunate to be healthy and stay safe, you know. My twins are 16 months old, so really been keeping us active, kind of just around the house here and stuff like that. So we haven't had the urge to need to leave the house much. But I appreciate you asking, and hope everyone out there listening and everyone's staying safe. And hopefully, you know, we're getting to the bottom of this and kind of can get out there back to real civilization again.
I appreciate you saying that. Good to have you on, Brandon. Capital One knows life does not alert you about your credit card. Hey, couch surfers. We have got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work. Oh, and Colleen. Yes, you, Colleen with a K. Your free trial of Movie Plus ends tomorrow, and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue or do you want to cancel? So meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials expire, and helps if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations do apply. All right, so very early on in the COVID-19 crisis, you, your foundation, and the Broncos teamed up to fund 120,000 meals through the Food Bank of the Rockies. How did that come to be, and then what did it feel like to be able to give back like that?
Yeah, I started my foundation last year, and it was important for me to, I've had some good mentors, I have this platform to be an NFL player to impact as many lives as I can. So I wanted to do something special and help, once it was kind of in the beginning part of this crisis at that point. And I wanted to be a partner up with, there's an event called The Taste of the Broncos that I've been the MC for the past couple of years. Which helps bring money to, the Denver Food Bank Rockies and the homeless shelters here in Colorado. And so I knew I already had a pre-existing relationship with them, and I knew it was a good time for my foundation and myself and, end up partnering with the Broncos to provide, like you said, 120,000 meals. And then just last week, my foundation, again, I wanted to highlight some. I'm a big foodie. And I like all the, new restaurants and trying everything here. So some of the best restaurants, that I think here in the Denver area, partner with them. And we end up donating 500 meals to the local hospitals here for the healthcare workers. So, we've just been able to try to give back as much as we can here during this, tough time.
Well done. Brandon McManus is joining us. Now, you and Von Miller are extremely close. In fact, he is the godfather of one of your sons. So what was your reaction when you found out that he had tested positive for COVID-19?
Yeah, it was tough, obviously. I was actually going over there to work out because he's got a gym at his house there. And I actually had stopped probably the week before he got it. For some reason, just the timing you worked out, I was kind of busy at the house and stuff like that. And, he called me instantly, let me know that, he was positive. And at that time, one of the doctors that I work with here, he was kind of doing a trial period. He's, how the MLB did a testing for the antibodies with a bunch of the staff members, stuff like that. He was kind of part of something similar. And I was able to go at least do some antibodies test there and stuff like that. And my wife and I were negative there, stuff like that, just to double check, because, I had been hanging out with Vaughn. But, I think it was a serious issue for him, obviously, with having asthma and stuff like that. And I think, he took it very seriously. And, I'm just happy that he's healthy and, hopefully back better than ever.
Brandon McManus is joining us. All right, then. So I enjoy having kickers on the show because I'm fascinated by the job and I'm fascinated by the mindset that you have to kick at that level. When did you first start kicking?
I was a pretty good athlete growing up. I played every sport. My main sport was soccer. And, I loved football. I was going to the Eagles game since I was 3 years old. My dad was taking me. And, I just loved the sport of football. I just was so busy playing the other sports that I didn't start actually playing football until seventh grade. Middle school, I played quarterback safety, and I was the obvious shoe-in as a kicker, having my soccer background. And continued to play, a bunch of sports up until 10th grade there, and then really thought that my best opportunity to get a college scholarship was kicking. I really honed in on that and was fortunate enough to get the college scholarship to Temple and started all 4 years there right away and, end up leaving as the all-time leading scorer. And then, as you said in the beginning, I was hoping to get drafted, went undrafted to the Colts, sat out a whole year, trying to compete against, the greatest kicker of all time, Adam Vinatieri there. And then had a, little break when I was with the Giants in 2014, they ended up trading me to Denver and then, have been here since and was able to win a Super Bowl. So, it's worked out, but I really kind of honed in on kicking, in seventh grade when I started football, and then 10th grade when I really just focused on it.
Brandon McManus is my guest. Now, former Broncos kicker Matt Prater holds the record for the longest field goal in history at 64 yards. You routinely make kicks of that length or more warming up in a game, and then last season against the Chargers, it looked like you might get a chance for a monster field goal, but ultimately you were called back to the sideline. How much is that record then in the back of your mind, or maybe at the front of your mind?
I think, like I said, being a football fan since I was 3 years old and having one of the stronger legs in the NFL and knowing that I can make that, obviously you still have to put it between the two yellow poles, but the distance isn't going to be an issue for that case. And it's just something I would love to be a part of, in NFL history. I'm good friends with Matt Prater, and You know, he texted me afterwards, and he couldn't believe that they didn't let me kick it. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's always obviously the coach's decision. And, you know, I definitely still, and he knows, you know, my buddy Vic Fangio knows that I still disagree with that. But, you know, hopefully at the end of the day, you know, I'll have another chance to break it. It's just a lot of times, you know, you don't get the perfect setting like that, that opportunity right at halftime there. But, you know, I would love to have that record. I think it's a unique thing to have. And, you know, I always like to keep setting the bar for the kickers who keep getting better and better every year.
How far do you think you can go in a perfect situation, the right conditions, you're feeling it, you hit it right? How far, what's the longest field goal you think you can hit realistically?
I'm getting old now, Jim. But, no, I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, I kicked a live rep in practice with the live Russian from 73 here in Denver. Woo. I had some wind, and it was the summertime in training camp, so it's definitely optimal conditions. But in a game, I think, you know, you're more around the 68-ish number, I think, is probably a realistic thing, you know, with warm weather. It doesn't technically really have to be in Denver per se. I think, you know, down in Miami or stuff like that when the ball is still going to travel, or in Arizona. I think 68 is probably a good number that is a realistic game number.
68 would be a great number. Brandon McManus joining us now. You're more than just a kicking machine. As an example, last April, you went to Augusta and you watched a practice round of the Masters and the tournament itself. And you've known Zach Johnson for a long time. The story goes, you asked him for an extra ticket. He then asked you if you want to be his caddy for the par three contest. What was your reaction when he asked you that?
Yeah, it was incredible. I'm a big golf fan, and I've known Zach for a bunch of years now, going to his charity event out in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, benefiting his foundation for kids and education there. And, you know, I asked for an extra ticket. I was bringing my brother-in-law because I know it was a dream trip for my dad and my brother Andy, and wanted to, you know, create that experience for him. So then 2 weeks before we got there, he texted me about, you know, caddying in the par three, and I almost thought he was joking because I couldn't believe it. But, you know, it's just this unbelievable experience just to be there, and then obviously to be inside the ropes. And you know, his caddy Brett Waldman showed me around, and you know, I had an incredible experience. One of the cool stories is I was in the caddy barn. He said if I wanted a beer, I said, yeah, of course I'll take a beer. So we take the beer, and he goes, all right, let's go. So we walk up right to the practice putting green, and I still have a beer in my hand, and I'm watching Tiger putt, Justin Thomas putt. I'm just sitting on the practice green with a beer in my hand. I'm looking around, and no one else has it. I'm like, what am I doing here? But,
so good.
No, it was an incredible experience to be a part of that. And I got a lot of crap from Peyton Manning because he said usually the only people who are caddying in it are the players' kids or supermodels. So. he cracked a bunch of jokes on me for it.
That is funny. So what did you think about the way Peyton was hitting it on Sunday? What did you make of his game?
Yeah, I thought he played for those conditions. Obviously, it's tough. And then to be on TV like that, you know, I think he would like to be better off the tee. You know, I think him and Tom were spraying it, you know, into those pine straws and those bushes. But I thought his iron play was fantastic. And, you know, when they needed him cut on 16 with that incredible shot there closest to the pin, almost had the $25 million hole in one. And on 18 to get it on the green there and let them, you know, pretty much two putt for the win, I thought was, you know, he's very clutch, you know, similar to what he's been doing for his whole career. And, you know, I enjoyed that match. I thought it was a blast for everybody to watch just to see two of the best players in golf and two of the best players ever in football. And just to see how humbling it is that these, you know, football players just get, you know, beaten down by the game of golf.
Hey, Brandon, one last thought before I let you go. What is your expectation as it relates to a timeline for training camp and off-season activities?
Yeah, I think, you know, just we're kind of coming up to the later part of when the OTAs would end. Usually it's June 15th around there, but with this, when they initially started with the virtual meeting stuff, they kind of pushed it to June 26th. Was kind of the last day that we could really do anything at a facility. But, you know, with some of the states still not opened, all 32 facilities have to be opened. And there's still a grace period of getting, one, employees and coaches into the building, and then also a grace period of build-up of practices that we can do on the field. And I just don't know if it's worth going in for maybe a week, and we can't even do much on the field because we have kind of that grace build up here because you don't know exactly what players have been doing in the off season and You know, you got almost a $200 million salary cap, and you don't want someone to pull a hamstring because you don't know what they've been doing just because they flew in, just got off a plane, and they have to do a three-day practice because that's the only time frame we can do. So in my opinion, just, you know, from hearing everything and the best breakdown is that we would report for training camp around that July 28th time, and I think that's the first time we'd be in a NFL facility. But I think we'll be able to go, you know, full-fledged right from that time period.
Brandon McManus is a Super Bowl champion, the kicker for the Broncos, and entering his seventh season with the team. We covered a lot of ground. Brandon, great to have you on the show. Appreciate the time. Thanks for the interview. Hope we can do it again.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
I've always said a golden ticket does not guarantee a spot on the air at the main event. Just ask Cal. He sat on hold for 3 hours, never even got to shoot his shot. But he stayed with it. And then, in 2016, he made his Smackoff debut, and he delivered a line about Conor McGregor that, of course, still follows him around a half a decade later.
Conor McGregor, you're the most overrated athlete I've ever seen in my entire life. You couldn't go two rounds against some out-of-shape, tequila-drinking pothead, and you're the king of Dublin. Next time you fly to Las Vegas, I'll be waiting for you at the airport. Then I'm going to rip that beard off your face and make you eat it.
An all-time threat. Not to another clone. That wasn't like clone-on-clone crime. That was him threatening one of the baddest dudes in the world. And not a one-off either, by the way. Not even close. Threatening violence against MMAers, former basketball players, and every single clone who has ever crossed him. That's essentially Cal in Vegas' brand. He owns that space.
Man, tell Chael, the next time I see him, I'm kicking his ass. I could tackle Marshawn Lynch. I'll grab him by the dreadlocks and slam him into the ground. Hey, Kyle, next time you're in Las Vegas, I'm kicking your ass. Stephen H-Town, I'm going to beat his ass, too. Chael Sonnen, as soon as you get here, I'm slapping you. Just like I'll slap your sidekick right in the face, Charles Barkley. Charles, the next time I see you in Las Vegas, I'm going to splash my drink in your face. Then I'm going to throw you through a freaking window, you big fat fraud.
Besides threatening to throw dudes out of windows and slap them in the face, Cal, of course, had a pretty memorable beef with ESPN's Jeff Passan back in 2016. Remember, at that time, Passan was writing for Yahoo and was a regular guest on this program. Passan knew the jungle cold and even showed up in a couple of smack-offs, one in which he called out Cal in Vegas. Cal's response did not come on the biggest stage, but it didn't need to. He fired back in the dead of October 4 years ago.
I love how Jeff thinks that he's the only clone with a career and a family, while the rest of us just sit in our bedrooms with a can of cheese balls in our lap. Jeff, you sound like a third grader. You said I can't read or count, and quote, pluck dingleberries. My dad can beat up your dad? Didn't want any of that? What's next, Jeff? I know you are, but what am I, smack? Jeff, you also look like a third grader with that little pudgy freckle face, those giant elephant ears, and that $8 Leave It to Beaver supercut. Jeff, you get hooked easier than Odell Beckham Jr. That's because I'm that guy you grew up hating. The guy that played varsity sports, got a lot of chicks, and was invited to all the cool parties. While you sat in front of the TV on Saturday nights, popping your own zits and watching Skinamax with a jar of Vaseline. The only way you can contribute was writing lame articles for your school newspaper. Now you write lame articles for some website that I had no idea still existed.
Freaking Cal! Yeah, that's a little dated. Passan's doing pretty well for himself. But freaking Cal. The thing about Cal is he might actually be his own worst enemy. He snatched 4 golden tickets since 2015, but only made it to air in the Smackoff once. And that was in 2016 when he did not even hit the board. Right now, he shares the exact same Smack-Off career as John in New York, Jolene in Farmington, and Ray Ray in Tampa. It's a fact. Look it up. 1 Smack-Off appearance, 0 top 10 finishes. My man has also been a magnet for the Choppa Blades. He's had half of his golden tickets ripped back. Last year, his RSVP was so bad, I called it the worst RSVP in jungle history. And it cost him a spot in Smack Off 25. And given his horrible history, of failing to walk from the on-deck circle to the dish, I can only assume this is why he already RSVP'd earlier this month and said on Twitter that he will not be calling again until the 19th.
I look like Kareem standing next to Rick in Buffalo. The reason I look small in that photo is because we're standing on a hill and Kyle's iPhone 3 is crooked. And Kyle is supposed to be some professional photographer. Kyle, you take pictures about as well as you run smack. Jim, I had the displeasure of riding in Kyle's Hotel on Wheels. That car is disgusting. It smells like weed and stale farts. Matt and Van came in here running his mouth. My favorite part of last year's Smack-Off is when Matt got run. I mean, that loser thinks we're friends. Matt likes to come down to Vegas and hang out because he knows I'll let him borrow some money. Matt says he gets down like Wilt Chamberlain in the bedroom. Wilt Chamberlain, you wish. More like AC Green. Consider this my official RSVP to Smack Off 26. Just like that giant zit on Brad and Corona's arse, I'll be there.
Now, normally I would caution against laying low. In fact, I say it every single day. But in Cal's case, given his track record, it might be his best move. It might be in his best interest to put a death grip on that ticket this year and just sit out the next 23 days and then find a phone. Because the fact of the matter is, especially after I hear that, I want this guy in the Smack Off. He is the very epitome of belligerent and absurd, and I am here for it.
I love how your producer, Adam Hawk, tries to sound like some tough guy when he answers the phone. Who's this? Who's this? It's Cal in Vegas. I created Smack Off Season. Before I got here, Smack Off Season was nothing but a couple of perverted RSVP calls. Hey, Jim, I can't believe you put me on hold for Joe Montana. I'm Conor McGregor. I got a tattoo of a tiger. And I'll rip that tiger off your gut and beat you with it. Danica from Jacksonville. Danica, they refer to you as the queen. The queen of what? The last thing you ruined was the first hour of the Smack Off. Keep Mike and his name out of your mouth. He's my bitch. Maybe Jim can start up a women's Smack Off league. Featuring Jolene, Sarah T, and that little bitch, Brad and Corona. I'd like to congratulate Adam Hawk for finishing the L.A. Marathon. I mean, I guess you could call that running. And I was surprised at how well Keith Arnold did. Keith, you don't even look athletic. With your little bird chest and that huge gut.
Bodie and Pearland, you're a grown man that uses words like Bubba and some bitch, really? Floyd Mayweather thinks you're illiterate.
Dana White, you look just like Andre Agassi, except you're really big and fat. Dana, I love the way you stand in between the fighters that weigh in, like you could do something.
Mike McCarthy. Hey, Mike, I hope you're in your car listening to me right now, you fat ass. And you can't coach. Mike, you have the brains of a pissing.
Old man Ritt doesn't have a care in the world. Just sitting back there crushing candy and flicking boogers all over the place. Like some two-year-old. Jim, I have to go. I got an elevator full of women coming up here to see me. And the Smack Off on the 3-minute man, but in the bedroom, I'm all night. Oh!
You know, there's there's some things I simply cannot explain. As an example, why that's so funny. Why I'm laughing so hard. Cal, brother, you are belligerent. Listen, brother. Man, learn from your mistakes. You've been at this now since 2015, and yet somehow, despite that incredible catalog of smack, all of that, you've only parlayed that into one appearance and no top 10 finishes. Despite all of that smack, all of those threats, all of that belligerence, this would only be your second Smack Off appearance. And yet you've been at it since 2015. That is bad math. So I'm telling you right now, I keep saying, do something that makes me want to take your phone call that day. Hearing all that, I want to take your phone call that day. But don't do anything stupid between now and then so I rip that ticket. You can make that event better, but you can only make it better if you're in it. June 19th, can't get here soon enough for me, for us, but most importantly, for Cal. Is he going to make it to the 19th? I don't know. I can't guarantee it. That's Cal. This is why we do the profiles. I don't think you really know any of these guys. I always say it's about athletes. We don't really know any of them. I could say the same thing about clones. We don't really know any of these people, but it's great to recap it like that. And as I mentioned, there's some things I can't explain, such as why that was so funny to me.
I'm going to splash my drink in your face. Then I'm going to throw you through a freaking window, you big fat fraud.
The thing about that is Charles Barkley has made it pretty clear on this show many times. He doesn't give a damn. He will run you through a window if you're asking for it. I don't know, Cal. No offense. Between you and Chuck, I'm taking Chuck. I'm guessing you're the guy going through the window. But out of respect to Cal, there's nobody he won't fight. Cal is the epitome of likes to fight guy. He threatens everybody. He is Terrell Davis, TD. Before we get into football, let me first ask you, how are you and everybody around you doing during this really unusual time and this pandemic?
Just trying to figure out what to do with our time.
Right.
Yeah, it's been interesting. But I think it's a time where you can kind of go back and, you know, catch up on some stuff. I really got a lot done during this last, 2 months. And I think the biggest thing is spending more time with the family and my kids and then really getting a chance to see them and their environment, with this distance learning. I get a chance to sit with my daughter who's preschool, and I've never seen her, actually sit there and learn and show me all the stuff that she's really growing in. So that's pretty cool to see that. My sons are doing the same thing. So I just try to take advantage of the time. That's all.
There you go. Terrell Davis joining us. Now, from checking your Twitter feed, it's pretty clear that you're also continuing to get your workouts in. You know, I'm always fascinated by guys and how they approach their retirement when they've been competing and training and denying themselves their entire lives. When they're done playing, some guys like to say, hey, you know what, this is my time. I'm going to just relax. I'm going to enjoy life. Others just stay right at it, and it's part of their lifestyle. What's been your approach?
Yeah, I always feel like I got a game to prepare for. I can't turn it off. It's just in me. I like to work out. I like to feel like, I'm in shape. I like to feel like I'm competing for something. And I always feel like if I stop working out, I almost feel like that's when you just feel like, you're starting to die. So like it's the end. So I just feel like for me, it keeps me motivated to keep working out. And again, like, when you work out, your body releases endorphins and it just makes you feel better. Releases stress, gives you a chance to kind of just be in a different space. And, 2 years ago, I don't know, actually 3 years ago, when I created this company, Defy, I was struggling to work out. And, this was kind of the second kind of chance for me to be able to feel good again. So that's why we created this company, Defy. And I really have felt great the last 3 years, which allowed me to get up and work out, three to four times a week as opposed to one or two times when I was doing before. So all is well, man. I'm just trying to, stay in shape the best I can. I'm 47 years old, man. 50 is right around the corner.
Dude. TD, you look amazing. Honestly, you look amazing. But again, this is not by some stroke of luck. You're putting in the time. You're doing the work. You know, I want to talk to you about the Broncos, and I want to talk about your career. But you and I talked about migraines in the past. And the attitude towards CBD has changed quite a bit over the years. I've talked to one retired athlete after another who has said that they wished CBD-related pain relief and performance products were an option for them when they played. Do you feel the same way about that?
Absolutely. When I played, I didn't know anything about CBD at all. And obviously, the last 3 years when I started looking at it and doing more research, and it was clear to me that it worked for pain management and for battling inflammation. And those were the two things that I really was struggling with. And so once I started to get on a routine with it, I saw immediate results. And so you think about it, you're like, wow, we had this when we were playing, because the name of the game, man, what it is. The name of the game is to get you back on the field and to play the next game, but feel better. And to have something that's natural, that has the effect that it has, and, that really doesn't have any long-term effects to it, it's really been remarkable for the results. So, yeah, absolutely. I always tell people, if I had this, I'm not saying I'm going to play, 10 more years, but I think you would have played more games where you would have felt, more close to the 90% or 100% versus going through the game feeling 50 and 60% and feeling those pains and aches throughout a game. And it's tough on an athlete when you have to think about that as you play.
We're talking to Terrell Davis. You know, something, I don't know if you were watching, I would imagine you probably did, but were you watching The Last Dance? And if so, you know, there was that reference to when the Bulls were playing the Pistons in the playoffs and Scottie Pippen had that migraine headache. It seems like Michael Jordan, even to this day, is still having a hard time believing that somebody could not play through a migraine. As somebody who has dealt with them, how brutal are they? I mean, it's not just another headache, right?
They are. I think the word, when you slap headache on it, I think it diminishes what it is. It's the headache part is 10 times worse than a normal headache, but it's really a condition. So what happens, it's not just the headache part. For me, I have temporary blindness. That's really from a half, any last from a half hour to an hour. And then you have nausea, vomiting. Sometimes you're disoriented. You can't remember things. And I've had migraines as long as 2 days. And so, yeah, it's a very debilitating condition. It's a disease. And it's on a spectrum disorder. So you can have it on a scale from a 1 to a 10. And mine were more of the 10 variety. I had more severe migraines. And now you're trying to play a sport. It's tough, man. And I commend Scotty and anybody who plays a sport and you play with a migraine. If it's a big game and you're a competitor, I don't care what it is, man. You're going to play through it. And that's, and people are like, well, how'd you play in that game? Like, you know what? I found strength somewhere. I was not going to come out of that game and leave my boys hanging. I had to suck it up, and that's what Scotty did.
We're talking to Terrell Davis. I can appreciate that. Like, I don't get them so much anymore, but I used to. And if it's on a spectrum of 1 to 10, they were not a 10, but I know exactly what you're talking about. There's, like, that loss of sight. I used to get these wavy lines where you couldn't see anything, and that would last maybe 20 minutes or a half hour, and then that would go away. And in the beginning, you think you're all right, but then the headache kicks in, the nausea kicks in.
Yeah.
Man, they're no joke. They're not fun. They're not just a headache. You don't hit that with a couple of Bear, and then you're good.
No.
It's a different deal.
No, bro. And not whatsoever, man. And imagine putting on a helmet. And
right, no, exactly.
Go bang heads with somebody.
No, I can't imagine that. I simply cannot imagine that, because I would imagine, like, I'm a guy that I don't like to ever miss work for any reason, but when I would get those, I'd play through them, but in front of a microphone, not knocking heads with somebody else. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Listen, when you and I, the last time you came on, we were talking about Steve Atwater, or since the last time. Atwater was voted into the Hall of Fame. He had been waiting a long time for that.
Yeah.
Terrell, you've been telling everybody that he deserved to be in. So what's your reaction now that it's official?
Yeah, man, that was a great day. I mean, to hear, you know, Steve finally get inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's been long overdue. And I talked to Steve over the years, and he's such a guy that it honestly didn't bother him. But it bothered me, you know, that he was not in there. And I said, Steve, I understand that, you know, you may not care about this, but, you know, you've got to come out and let people know that you care, that you are watching and that you really feel like, you know, you should be in the Hall of Fame. And he was like, well, I don't know. But then he started to come out a little bit more talking to the voters. But I'm not saying that's why he's in, but I do think that sometimes when you're not visible, some of the voters do tend to look at guys who are, and they get in, and some of the older guys get lost. But the bottom line is that he's finally in. At this point, it doesn't matter when he got in. He's finally in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Well deserved. And Steve has been, what people don't give him credit for is, you know, when you watch when we had our Super Bowl run, and even Super Bowl 32, I mean, I ended up becoming MVP in that game. But watch that game, Steve closely could have been considered for MVP in that game. The plays he made, the sack on Brett Favre, strip fumble, batted down the last pass that was intended, I think it was for Robert Brooks, and he blew up that thing. And he's made play after play. He was a mentor of mine when I first got to the Broncos, told me things that I was tipping off when we were running certain plays. But he's just been a pro and a guy who's unselfish and just comes to work every day. So, I'm glad Steve's finally in.
It, really interesting to hear you say that as a Hall of Fame running back, that he was one of your mentors. When you first came up, aside from Steve Atwater, who were some of the other guys that may have taken you under their wing? Who else did you look to?
When I got to Denver?
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, John. You know, John was one that, playing with John, man, it's like playing with Michael Jordan, man. Like, you better bring it, dude. You can't come to a game with anything less than your best. Shannon Sharp was somebody that Shannon really changed the way that I I approach the game from a health standpoint and preparing, you know, getting your meals prepared, doing all the things off the field, getting the massages, the acupunctures, the chiropractor. And I never did none of that. And I'm watching Shannon the way he went about his business. And I was like, that dude is on another level. So I just kind of watched him, went out to his place in Atlanta, trained with him during the offseason. He put me on to his nutritionist. So he was really good at that. And again, all these guys were really good. So there was quite a few people there. My coach, Bobby Turner, was really instrumental in kind of taking me to another level mentally with the game. But everybody needs those. And, you know, I certainly grew over the years. I wasn't Terrell Davis when I first got into the Broncos, but it took a team of coaches and players and people to kind of help get that out of me and help me develop into a pro.
Hall of Famer Terrell Davis joining us. One quick thought also, you know, you talk to Bronco players, it seems like the current players, they're really fired up about quarterback Drew Lock. As a team, when you feel like you found your guy quarterback and you've got confidence in that guy, how much does that impact every other player in the locker room? Is that the kind of thing that gives everybody a life?
Yes, it is. And that's when you talk about a special player and they say he has that it factor. It's not just on the field. It's how that person affects other people around him. And it's contagious. When you have a player that it just has that, you know, if you call it swag, call it whatever you want to call it. And it's like the person that people's going to follow him. They gravitate towards Drew Lock. And he's found a way in that locker room that everybody speaks like he is the dude. Like, they love his confidence. They love his competitiveness. They like his, you know, that he's involved. He's engaged with the teammates, and his on the field play is there. So, you know, you can do all you want to. You can be a good teammate, but if your play's not on the field, then some guys won't respect you. And it looks like everybody's respecting him for not only what he's doing off the field, but what he's doing on the field. And so, I'm excited about it, man. What I saw from him last year, we all are excited to see how he picks up in 2020. And now you throw some weapons out there, Jerry Jeudy, they got KJ Hamler, you know, they went and got a tight end and Big Albert O. You know, so the Broncos, man, they got to keep up with Kansas City, and they recognize that. So you better bring some firepower. Don't forget Melvin Gordon, they got over and signed as a free agent too, so. It'll be interesting to see how this offense clicks this year.
TD, what do you think about that really quickly? Melvin Gordon, do you like that pickup? Did they need him? Do you like that fit?
Of course, man. Here's what I know. You can never have two. I mean, they have Philip Lindsay, and, you know, Royce is there, but you could never have too many backs. And to bring Melvin Gordon, who is a different style of runner than Philip Lindsay, it makes sense to me. You know, so absolutely. Ian, he's in his own division. You know, maybe he gets a little – get his blood boiling and get him to get fired up a little bit. But no, absolutely, man. I like Melvin. I've always liked Melvin Gordon. I thought, you know, he was one of those backs that never really gets the credit that he deserves. But I think he's a really, really good running back. And so, yeah, hopefully Denver's able to use him in a way that can kind of utilize his talent.
That's what I'm talking about. I like him too. I've always liked him. And it's just a matter of fit and use. And they have an embarrassment of riches there. So, TD, if people want more information about DeFi, where do they go to get it?
Yeah, go to drinkdefi.com. We just released our DeFi Zero, so it has no sugar in it. And again, that's drinkdefi.com. We're pretty excited about it, man. So come see us.
Good to hear it. Two-time Super Bowl champ, a Super Bowl MVP, Terrell Davis. Great to have you back, TD. Thanks so much. I appreciate you.
Jim, always, my man.
Kalani Sitake is my guest. Kalani, it's so good to have you back. Let me first ask, how are you and your family doing in the middle of this extremely unusual time?
We're doing great, you know, and I think this, although it is some stressful times, we've been able to capitalize on it and spend some quality time together and try to make the most of the adjustment in our schedule. But it's been a lot of fun, and I understand a lot of people are struggling out there. I just want to let them know that we're thinking about them in our prayers. But for the Sitake family, we've become a lot closer and then trying to make the most of it.
Absolutely. In fact, in terms of the family, I bring this up because your daughter Sadie posted a video of the two of you dancing to Countdown. I was blown away by this. Now, we've talked about your legendary dancing in the past, but this was some next level stuff. You were really locked in. How much time went into prepping that video and how much fun was it to make?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, not that much time. And, you know, it was a challenge from my daughter's dance club, the dance club. And I think to do with the family member, for me and my daughters, you know, especially when your kids ask you to do something, I want to do my best. And so I've been bragging to her that her dance moves come from me. But I don't know. If you see her mom dancing, you'll realize that I'm probably the one holding her back from becoming a great dancer.
That's great.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun and try to do as much as we can. And whenever my baby girls ask me, I'm going to do whatever it is, if it's TikTok or dancing or doing some kind of choreography. Choreography is a lot of fun, you know, so I enjoy it.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was going to ask you, how much time have you and the kids been spending on TikTok, and what's that been like?
Oh, it's been so much fun. I'm not a big social media guy. I don't get on it quite often, except for the recruit. But I think it's been there's so many funny things out there and so many funny people. And it's been really cool to see some of the creativity that you see people doing things. And, for us, we just try to have as much fun as we can with it. And more than anything, I've been impressed with the skills that are out there from everyone that I've seen that puts their stuff out there, especially the humor side of things.
There's some really creative people out there. BYU head coach Kalani Sitake is my guest. Now, one of the things I've always appreciated about our conversations is the fact that we don't just talk football, because you are interested in things outside the game. So in that sense, how have you gone about connecting with your players during this time and checking in with them about how they're doing as young men and not just football players?
Yeah, you know, at the beginning, I think everyone was just trying to connect and make sure that the players are doing well. But it's more than anything, just for myself and our staff to be out there for our players, to educate them on what's happening and make them socially aware of the issues that could happen, the dangers, but also let them know that we're here for them. And a lot of that, sometimes when you're dealing with it, it just doesn't have to be the game of football. It could be a lot of different things, and our players struggle with a lot of different things just like everybody else's players do. And I want them to know that we're here as a resource for them to lean on, whether it's some advice from a person that's been through the game and has played college football, even at BYU, or if it's just some things that they're struggling with and as far as relationships or handling the juggling everything with academics and representing BYU. You know, I think that we have a lot of things to share there, and it doesn't have to always be football. And it's actually kind of a relief when you can do things other than just focused on the game of football. You can do things that can help someone in their life and help them transition from being a young man to an adult.
And I will ask you about football in 1 minute, but, you know, you've been stressing the point you just made, and that also that as important as your job is and as important as sports are, there are still more important things in life. Do you feel like maybe you come out of this experience viewing things a little bit differently and maybe feeling even more gratitude for the things that you used to think were just kind of normal? I mean, do you come out of this feeling with even greater gratitude?
Of course. I think everyone can attest to that, you know, I get paid to win football games. That's my job, but that's not my motivation. My motivation is to help people, and what I get to do is help young men transition to become an adult and be contributors to the community and to society altogether. But you know, it's hard for me when you're that's your job and that's your motivation, to not recognize that people are struggling throughout the world, and they're struggling in our country, and it doesn't have to be a sports team. It could be businesses. It could be people that are struggling with everything that's affecting the economy and all that. And I think it's important that they know that there's others thinking of them and trying to do their best. And I think we have a group of players. We have our team, 70% of our team are guys that put aside their own life for 2 years to go out there and serve others. And so it only makes sense that during this time that we're available to help people in the community. And I've been really impressed with the players and from our team, seeing them go out and help people out in the community, help people get better and whatever they can do to help serve others. And that's my honor as a coach to get to see them do that on the front lines. And then I've been really impressed with everyone that's doing some, you know, some of the hard work, just seeing the people transition where their business is and doing whatever we can to help support them. I think it's important that we do that. And as we trend towards getting things back to normal, I'm looking forward to things back to normal, which means football in the fall and everyone enjoying life and staying safe.
Kalani Sitake, the head football coach at BYU, joining us once again. All right, so on the football front, you were able to hold 6 practices before everything was shut down in March. What were the practices like, and what information were you able to take away from them?
Well, I wish we had the 9 other practices, but I can say we had 2 live parts in our practice, 2 live sessions that gave us a lot to look at, and I've been really excited that, you know, we had to play 3 quarterbacks last year and not what we planned on doing, because of injury, now we have a deep squad at quarterback, and we had to start a bunch of different linemen because of injuries. And now I we've been a young team for the last couple of years. Now I think we're a more older and experienced team, meaning more time on the field. We have a lot of guys that have started and will provide us more depth, which has been kind of the detriment at BYU, is that the depth is, when you test it, sometimes it's not as good as you'd like it to be. And I can honestly say right now our depth is a lot better than it has been, but you know, I'm really excited on what we're seeing from our players. During this time, I saw our players grow closer together and become more self-sufficient. They had to they'd be independent to handle their own business, and I saw guys doing all the things the right way. But more than that, I saw our players and leadership, even when they're not able to see each other, those guys bind together and bond together as a group, and doing it through virtual meetings and things like that has been a sight to see for me, and I can't take credit for that. I just have really good young men that are raised by wonderful families, and I get to be around them a lot and see the things that they get to do as leaders.
You know, and then you mentioned the virtual meetings. You've been able to use Zoom meetings to connect with people outside the program as well, and you connect them to people inside the program. As an example, Andy Reid spoke to the athletic department, Steve Young, Dennis Pitta, and more have spoken to position groups. How valuable is it to have these sessions, and what have your guys been able to take away from them?
Oh, it's been huge. You know, we've had a lot of stars that are on here, a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame and guys that are all pro and won Super Bowls. And that's been all really good, but it's also connecting them with just the regular guys that had a role, that love their role here on the team, you know. And it could have been something that they just were a special teams phenom and enjoyed their time at BYU. But connecting them, I think, has been really important. Not everyone's going to be the big stars that you mentioned, the Steve Youngs, the Jim McMahons, and Ty Detmers, and all those great ones that are out there. And I think it's important that they know that everyone that has a role here relished it and enjoyed it and enjoyed their time, and they're just as important as everyone else, because in fact they're the ones that help elevate those others. You know, without those old linemen, Steve Young wouldn't be able to do what he did, without the receivers catching the ball. And so, and the great part is listening to those great former Cougars talk about their gratitude to the people that helped them get to where they're at. And so it's been a really positive moment for us. And that's something that we never would have thought about before, because, you know, getting them sitting around a computer screen, it was a huge improvement for our team, and it bonded us not only with each other, but with the alumni and the former greats.
I mean, Kalani, Andy Reid is something else. I mean, he is something else, no matter where you work, where you coach, where you've been. But as one coach, and especially being a valued member of the BYU family the way you are, how happy were you for him to see him win that Super Bowl finally?
Oh, that was awesome. And you know, just I love the way that he kept those guys going, because things were looking tough. But, I mean, what does it matter when those guys came back from 24 points earlier in the playoffs to win the game? And so it's like you just can't count them out. And he had a gunslinger in Patrick Mahomes that just had this sense of confidence that was really impressive. And I thought it was a really good example for all football players and all teams to watch, that you just keep playing and you keep doing what you're supposed to, and coaches remain calm and trust your players to make the plays. And that was such a cool example for me as a coach to watch Andy Reid at his best. And he's coached some great ones, but they're able to take, you know, that team and then elevate them to winning a Super Bowl. Now, I'm a little sad because Fred Warner is one of our guys, the guys that I coached, that is on the other side, and I love the Niners as well. But, man, it was so cool to see, Dan Sorensen and Andy Reid and those guys, you know, the Chiefs, get that Super Bowl win.
Kalani Sitake joining me for another couple of moments. All right, so I know that you're going to play wherever you play, whatever the situation is, you're going to be ready to do it, and your team will be too. Would you be okay, though, playing without fans in the stadium? What would that be like?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've been asked that many times, and it's like we watch all the UFC fights, right? I don't think those punches were any softer, you know. And when you watch those guys fight with nobody in the arena, they still celebrated like there were fans there. It was the competition is the most important thing, and when you focus in it, and the true competitors don't worry about who's watching. They just focus on what they've worked so hard and sacrificed to be in that moment. And then even at the end, there's a huge sense of sportsmanship and a mutual respect. And that's what's going to happen regardless of what sport it is, whether it's MMA or if it's basketball or football or baseball, whatever it could be. I think you're going to see a lot of people just have that fierce competition, but a wonderful mutual respect, especially going through what we've all had to go through in the world together in this last couple months. And I think it's going to make the world of sports a lot better. I'm thankful that during this time we've had wonderful people like yourself and others that are in the sports media that have kept things creative and had fun with things and be able to keep the sense of sports coming alive, and that, you know, keeping everyone optimistic that things are going to get better and return to normal. And I think we're seeing that trend the right way. So I'm really excited about the next few weeks.
Well, Klein, you too. You're helping us keep it going, and I appreciate that. One really quick thought. You mentioned the UFC. You probably would agree with this. I'm a huge MMA guy, UFC guy. I was shocked at how good it was, even without the fans. I mean, clearly, I'd like to have them there, and it'll be good when they come back. But that first event in Jacksonville, I was blown away. But it's really a tribute to the athletes, right? The way they lock in and the way they perform, regardless of the environment around them. That's what it speaks to.
Exactly. And, you know, I think it actually got them more focused. You saw them enter the arena and enter the octagon with a different sense, you know. And I think no distractions, no one trying to steal their hat or anything like that. It was just walking in with a mission in sight of competing and then just focusing on the other. I mean, it was such a cool thing to see. And I think a lot of people and everyone that had their eyes on it were really excited about it. But it was also cool to see the match with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, and I think that's something that was really cool. They should keep that going, the trash talking that was going on, and it was just fun to just see people compete, and regardless of what the sport was. I think this whole thing, this whole transition, the pandemic, will make sports better, and I think everyone will appreciate it a lot more. And I know the participants in the arena will do well, but I imagine the fans will follow suit and make this an even more enjoyable part of life, which is what we call sports.
I really agree with you. He is the head football coach at BYU, entering his fifth season there, and has led them to 3 bowl games in his first 4 seasons. Kalani Sitake, my guest. Kalani, I appreciate you very much. Great to have you back. Thank you so much for doing it, and I'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks for your time, Jim. Appreciate you.
Nobody does social media better than the UFC. I mean, yes, NBA Twitter is fun. NBA Twitter at times can be amazing, but it can't compete with the UFC, because outside of Joel Embiid trying to put a triangle choke on Carl Anthony Towns under a basket, rare is the day that ballers actually come to blows over their online barbs. That does not happen very often. In the UFC, they almost always transition flawlessly from thumb to phone to fist to face. We see it a lot. Over the weekend, a couple of BMF legends were mixing it up again on Twitter. Two of my favorites, in fact, Stockton's Nate Diaz and arguably my favorite, and I don't play favorites, but this guy's probably my favorite, Game Bread, Jorge freaking Masvidal. But I love both these guys. It all started with Nate posting a picture of himself shirtless and tweeting a message to the entire world. And that message is, quote, P4P, the baddest mother bleeper here. Bleep all you all. Except, you know, Nate, he didn't put bleep. He put it in there. What a great way to end that, first of all. Only Nathan Diaz, bleep all you all, with a middle finger in between two fists. It is so awesome. It's very Nate. Very on brand for Nate. I love Nate. Nate is funny, man. He is so funny. He does not get nearly enough credit for being as funny as he is. Bleep all you all, and here's a finger. Well, nobody's surprised. You knew the man who stopped him in the inaugural BMF title bout, Game Bread, would have something to say about that, and the two of them went at each other back and forth, with Jorge wanting to run it back yet again. Now, some of you might not be all that interested in seeing that fight again. A lot of you felt that Masvidal was winning pretty easily before the doctor stopped the fight because Nate's eyelid was starting to fall off. Me, I would love to see these two square off again. Nate is an extremely prideful dude. Nate's bent about the way that went down and about the stoppage. I personally would throw down good money to watch them run it back. And like many of you who were surprised that the rivalry sparked back up, you can also add UFC welterweight champion Kamaru Usman to that list. Because while the 170-pound king went off while talking to Brett Okamoto, he offered to give Jorge and Conor McGregor both title shots.
This is what I have to say to both guys, is both guys now are champions of Twitter, typing stuff up on Twitter. That's what both guys are champions of, talk on Twitter. In the history, who has ever said no to a title shot? I'm that only guy. I'm that boogeyman that these guys are saying no to a title shot for. And they better remain quiet, because we've seen with Jorge Masvidal, you've had the opportunity. April 18th, you had the opportunity. You said no. May 9th, you had the opportunity. You said no. June, you said no. Now July, you want to fight Nate, a fight that wasn't competitive. You know, and Conor, you said you want to be the king of the 170 division. Now you're quiet. So you know what? Just remain quiet. That's what I expect. Remain quiet, both of you guys. Remain quiet, because I've given both of you guys a shot, and none of you guys want to take it. So.
Like, I'm the boogeyman. Here I am. You know where to find me. Here I am. Come and get some. But you don't want any of that. There's so much going on here. There is so much to talk about right now in the UFC. Dana freaking White, he has got rich people problems right now. He's got so many exciting possible matchups that can be made. Starting with Usman. Listen, Usman is a bad, bad man. An absolute badass who can wrestle at a high level and has shown the world that he doesn't even have to use it to beat big-time fighters like Colby Covington. I mean, Tyron Woodley is a beast, and Usman destroyed him to rip his strap. So for anyone who fights this dude, they're going to have their hands full. The best of the best are going to have their hands full. He is the boogeyman, and I believe him when he says he's ready to go. Now, saying that, I know for a fact Jorge, my guy Jorge, is not afraid of Usman. Jorge is not afraid of anybody. Hell, during Super Bowl week, after he got done talking to me on Radio Row, the two of these dudes ran into each other and nearly gave each other the hands on Radio freaking Row. I saw it. It was right off to the side of me. And I know Jorge would not have had a problem with that. Remember what Jorge did to Leon Edwards backstage after he iced Darren Till.
It's amazing to silence people. It's a drug that most people have never tasted. Man's tried to duplicate it, but they can't find the recipe for it, you know? So I'm glad I got the recipe.
Let's talk about that opening sequence.
Maybe not. If you... Shay, come over. He's taking my face.
Okay, so that was Leon Edwards back there with Jorge Masvidal. I don't understand what just happened
here.
Well, I do. I know exactly what happened there. Jorge was talking to you after icing Till, and Edwards was off to the side talking junk, and then Jorge left you to go to Edwards and said, "Say it to my face." The video is amazing if you haven't seen this. Jorge walks over to Edwards with his hands behind his back as if to say, I'm not here to give you your hands, but I'm here to give you the opportunity to say what you're saying to me during my interview, but say it to my face. And then when he went over there, he saw Edwards raise his hands up, which to Jorge is the universal sign that you're going to give me them hands. So he punched him in the face repeatedly. It's an amazing piece of video and sound. Literally, in the midst of doing an interview, after the biggest win of his career, he walks over and he gave, quote, that hooligan, Leon Edwards, the hands. Listen, my man Jorge has been fighting dudes in the street his entire life. Nothing scares him. Why hasn't this fight between Usman and Jorge gone down yet? I don't really know. Maybe Jorge is looking at a money fight. Maybe Nate, maybe Conor, which also would be awesome. Imagine Jorge and Conor. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. Dana could speak to that. I just know this. Jorge, game bred. Masvidal is not ducking anybody. And to Usman's other point, him calling out Connor if Jorge doesn't take the fight. You know, what about that? Usman's funny, man. He also promised Connor. Usman told Connor he wouldn't even take him down for the first two rounds of the fight. He literally said that. Like, how insulting is that? Hey, Connor, I promise. I promise I won't use a major part of my arsenal, a major part of mixed martial arts, so I could give you a puncher's chance because that's what you do. Right, Connor? Go ahead. I'll give you a couple of rounds. Take some free shots. Connor's been hammering, quote, leg huggers for a while now. So Usman said, all right, fine. Let's stand straight up. I'll stand with you, and I'll still beat you down. Again, I would love that, too. Connor can throw. Usman is a major step up in competition. I would love to see the two of these guys stand in front of each other and trade. And, you know, Connor. As for Connor, he's got other options. Side note, I did see Connor tweet his greatest pound-for-pound fighters list of all time, and he named himself the second GOAT. Behind Anderson Silva. That's so Connor. I'm glad that Connor left wiggle room so that he could ultimately become the ultimate GOAT someday. But he's just humble and modest enough to say, yeah, I'm not that guy. Not yet. I am number two. But in the cage, it seems like he really wanted to fight Justin Gaethje after Gaethje put on that incredible show in ending Tony Ferguson's run. And while I would love to see Connor and Justin fight, and how awesome would that be, Gaethje's made it pretty clear he's going to wait for Khabib later this year. So my point, if you're asking me where are you going with all this, Rome, here's my point. I don't know exactly who or what is next. I just know that Dana White has got an island, a fight island, and lots of potential great fights. And apparently the infrastructure on the island is nearly complete. And there are hotels on the island. And obviously, fighting facilities on the island. I want to see Fight Island. Like, Dana's not telling anybody where it is, exactly when it's going to be done, except it's close. So, this is a great time in the UFC, and the best part is, they finally do give each other the hands. You know they'll be giving each other the thumbs, but not long after they give each other the thumbs, they will then give each other the hands. UFC Twitter is still the best.
Good night now!